You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Play action fake. Good pass. Caught by Bates. He's loose. Gets a block. And he's gone. Down the sidelines. Speedy B. Touchdown. 58 yards. They're going to run it. They are going to throw for it. And they're going to score a touchdown. Luke Tasker was only looking that way. And wide open. Tasker for two more.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, I say this every week, but this week I truly mean it. We have got a ton to talk about. It has been a very busy past 7 days here in Tiger Town. But first, we got to talk about the game that happened last Saturday. And as you so eloquently put it to me in a text message, this was quite the kick in the dick, was it not?
It was a really hard loss to take. They performed well offensively and defensively pretty much the whole game. And to let this one slip through their fingers really, really hurts. It hurts way more than that 60-1 bashing earlier in the year by the Stampeders. It's just, it puts a real dent in their playoffs hopes. I know it's possible, but I've pretty much given up hope that this team's going to make a run now after that loss, which they a game that they absolutely had to have.
Yeah, this one definitely stings. They pretty much completely outplayed the Argos for almost the entire game. And then the Ticats gave up 22 unanswered points in the fourth quarter in overtime and lost this one 43-35. They had a 35-21 lead in the fourth quarter. The offense was humming. The defense was crushing it. And they just collapsed. Like, I don't think there's any other way to put it. They just collapsed, Mike.
Yeah. What do you think they took the foot off the gas pedal defensively in that fourth quarter? Do you think that they were playing a little bit of prevent?
Yeah, they seemed to be a little bit more passive once they had the big lead, especially late. I think they get that interception, what was it, like 2 minutes left, and I think that was sort of like everyone in the stands and everyone, I think, thought the game was over. And then they take the time count penalty that kills it down and keeps the clock stopped, and they ran almost no time off the clock, where two first downs pretty much would have ended the game. And they get nothing out of it, and then they put the defense back on the field, and I was confident. I was like, okay, this defense has played pretty well all night. And you look at a 43-point total and you think, oh, the defense must have stunk. But for most of the night, they were getting pressure on Ray. They really didn't give up a ton at all. And then I'm sitting here going, okay, they'll get this. They got this. And they didn't. And it was kind of shocking, which is a great way to feel, because earlier in the season there would have been no chance. I remember the Edmonton Eskimos game that was at Tim Hortons Field. They had the lead late there, and the Esks had the ball, and there was no doubt in my mind that the Eskimos were going to go down, score, and win the game, and they did. This, to me, I felt the complete opposite. But, yeah, I do feel a little bit like they may have taken the foot off the throat a little bit in the end there.
Yeah, and they had a third and 17. I mean, what have we been talking about for a long time now? It's mostly the second and longs, because there's not really, unless it's the fourth quarter like it was, and they have to make the first down, you're not going to usually get people, teams gambling on third and even 5 yards. So to give up that play was it took a lot out of this team, I think, because you look at third and 17 and you should be able to get that stop, especially the way that they were performing all game long.
Yeah, so there's an elephant in the room that I think we have to discuss first before we get into offense and defense, and that was the officiating. I don't think that there's anyone out there who watched this game that wouldn't look at it and say that there were a number of borderline to absolutely horrendous calls in this game. And I think if you're a Ticats fan, you probably believe that that tipped the scales in favor of the Argos. Now, I hate that we always have to say this, but we're not going to sit here and blame the referees for the Ticats losing this game. We're going to get into the things the Ticats did in this game that cost them that. We just touched on a little bit with the defense. We'll get into it with what the offense was unable to do that cost them this game. But we have to start with talking about the officiating, because that's the big story coming out of this game. And there were probably four instances that I can single out that the refs made either egregious errors, or refs in command center, because I want both to get their full credit in air quotes for the mistakes made here. There's four instances in this game that I think we can point out and we can discuss as to mistakes made by neither of the actual teams on the field that kind of tipped this in the favor of the Argos. The most egregious one, I think, was the pass interference call that DeMond Washington got on SJ Green. It was not called on the field pass interference. The Argos challenged, and they won it. And from what I heard, again, I was at the game, so I wasn't watching on TV, but Glenn Suter apparently was saying there's no way this is going to get overturned. Mm-hmm. If it does, we're not playing tackle football anymore. And then it does, and he says that's the worst call he's seen all year. There were instances later in the game.
Which is saying something, right? Which is saying a lot.
It is, because the TSN guys don't normally come out and say stuff like that. They're very – I'm not saying that they kowtow to the league, but they're very sensitive to making sure that they don't tick off the league, because they're partners in this, and that's understandable. But so for someone like Suter to come out and say, like, that's garbage, that says something. And then, of course, there was non-calls later in the game. I think one of the best examples is Brandon Banks. Remember the Brandon Banks catch where he catches it, he lands on his back, and he puts the ball in the air with one hand to show he caught the ball? He was absolutely mugged on that play. They showed it on the video screen. He's being hugged by the Argos defender. There was no flag thrown. Now, he caught the ball, so it didn't matter, but that's beside the point. And then there was the C.J. Gable pass interference in the backfield on the screen pass that Ticats had to challenge to correct it, which it was obvious that he was basically tackled in the backfield. So it's like you see this, and if you look at the replay, and it's out there, it's on Twitter, we have a small video of it on 3Down Nation, you see it's barely a bump. And I guess by the letter of the rule, it's pass interference, but I've seen way worse than that. I just outlined a couple instances here, but just in general over the course of my life watching football, way worse than that, that doesn't get called. And I'm with Suter on this. If that's pass interference, we're not playing football anymore.
No, we're not. We're playing flag football or touch football, whatever you want to call it. It's I cannot believe that they overturned that call. I mean, the other teams are going to look at that, and then Suter said this during the game, other teams are going to look at that and say, well, you called pass interference on that, so why isn't this pass interference? It's just, it blows my mind that they overturned that call. It was such minimal contact. It's just, I don't know what to say about it. It's just a really, really bad call, and not by the referees, but by Command Center, who has the chance to look over the play over and over and over again. They took a really long time looking at this, and apparently that's pass interference. So I guess we're going to see a lot of pass interference calls going down the stretch, because if that's what it is now, then pretty much every play there's pass interference.
Absolutely. And the Ticats clearly agree with this, with what we're saying here, because they have, I don't know if you saw this, they've asked the CFL to review the call. So this one clearly ticked them off as well, obviously, because it affected the outcome of their game. And it looks like we're going to go back to that old well of the league apologizing to Ticat fans for terrible calls in games. I got a list of them here. In 2015, we had the Brandon Stewart interception called back when two flags were thrown on the Ticats, one on Craig Butler for a quote-unquote tourist hit, another on Simone Lawrence for a low block against Ottawa. The league came out and said those were wrong, that interception touchdown should have stood. Again, against Ottawa, the Greg Ellingson catch and fumble last year. I think we all remember that one. Catches a ball, Ticats strip him of it, recover the fumble. It goes to review. It's called an incomplete pass. The league came out and admitted that was wrong. We had the Mike Filer incident when Ken Austin ended up hitting a referee. And they called Filer for a penalty for moving the ball, and they came out and said that was wrong. And then I think the ones that hurt the most, obviously, was last year in the East semifinal. We had the Revenberg holding call on the same play that there was no roughing the passer called on Odell Willis when he hit Zach Collaros, and the league came out and admitted both those calls were wrong. So it seems to be an annual thing we're doing here, Mike. We're watching the refs botch something or the command center botch something. And a lot of these are the command center. The Ellingson fumble was the command center. The roughing the passer call was both the command center and the referees. We're seeing them botch something, and then the league comes out a couple days later and says, hey, sorry, we got it wrong. But that doesn't do anything for the team. It's still a loss in the column. The fans are furious. Like, I'm sick of seeing these apologies because they're completely meaningless.
Yeah, it's frustrating to say the least. And it's not like it's just the Tiger Cats that get screwed over by these calls. And I kind of roll my eyes when I see fans of other teams, you know, going so heavily after the referees. But I mean, it just hurts when it's your favorite team and you see these calls. I mean, especially in this game, because I thought this was the best game, the best effort that the Ticats have put forward all year long. And like you said earlier, we're not blaming the refs, but they had a big part in how this game turned out.
For sure they did. So let's talk about a couple other calls in this game. The fumble by Declan Cross, that Simone Lawrence bat out of bounds. Just so everyone's aware, there's a rule on the books about how this should be adjudicated. It is in Section 9, Article 3, and it states, and this is the full rule I'm quoting here, when on a play, on any play, the ball is fumbled out of bounds or touches a player in the field of play and then goes out of bounds, it shall belong to the team that last touched the ball in the field of play. A team shall be entitled to possession when a player of the team, while off the ground, knocks or bats the ball directly out of bounds, provided he lands in bounds. So on this play, Simone clearly bats the ball out of bounds, lands in bounds, and there's been some discussion that maybe it bounced off Declan Cross on the way out, but the addendum to this rule of the player having to be off the ground would cover that. So this should have been Ticats' ball, no?
Yeah, I thought it should have been. I mean, he was punched out, and then it was touched again by the Tiger Cats, I thought. So, yeah, I thought it should have been Ticats' ball.
And then I don't know if you saw the press conference or interview with Simone Lawrence after the game where he talked about this, and he was told by the ref after he said to him, hey, I batted that ball out of bounds, the ref said that didn't matter. And to me, that out of all of these calls, and we're going to get to a couple more in a bit, that might be the most worrying part of this, because if that's true, doesn't that say to you that the refs seemingly don't know the rules of the game?
Either that or they just don't want to admit that they made a mistake. You know, you see this a lot in baseball with umpires. They're just so stubborn and, you know, they're just never wrong that they won't admit when they are actually wrong. So, yeah, I think it just shows a little bit of arrogance on the ref's part, because you look at that replay and it sure looks like Tiger Cat should have had that ball.
And again, so far we've seen an interception wiped off the board on a bit of a phantom pass interference call. Another turnover wiped off the board because I guess the refs either are, like you said, too stubborn to go, oh, yeah, we screwed that up, or they just don't know the rules. Either way, not acceptable. That's huge momentum swings that could have gone the Ticats' way, that could have changed this game. The last two things I'm going to point out here, I don't think these ones are as bad. I think these are more judgment calls than anything else. There was an incomplete pass to Brandon Banks where it's funny. I actually phoned my dad at halftime to tell him about the free socks that I got him at the game. And he was like, oh, what do you think about the Banks no catch? And we started talking about that. And it looked to me when I was watching it live, because of the way the bodies were, that it was an incomplete pass. I came home and saw the replay, and it looked to me, and maybe you can speak to this better than I can. Remember, it was one where he was thrown deep in the middle of the field, kind of bobbles it, falls to the ground. The one replay I saw, looks like he catches it. May not have, I'm not sure if he had complete control. I don't know. And this is why I don't think this is such a big deal. But he looks like he's on the ground, and the Argo defender swats it after he's on the ground.
Yeah.
To me, that looks more like it's a completed catch. Now, you watched the game on television. What did you think?
I thought it was a catch. You know, he came down with the ball. He survived contact on the ground, and then the Argos player came in and kind of slapped the ball out of his hands. To me, that's a catch. It wasn't really a catch, so... You know, I wasn't sure last week with the Banks catch where he caught the ball and the ball touched the turf. I didn't think that was a catch, but I might have been wrong about that because of the rules in place. I wasn't positive about, you know, the rules. I thought that he kind of trapped the ball, but in this instance, I thought for sure that was a catch.
Okay, well, that's good because, again, when you're watching it at the stadium versus watching it on TV, you get different angles. So I'm glad that at least what I saw when I watched the replay, at least you're confirming it. So I don't feel so crazy with this one. But that's, again, that's another blown call. And that was a big play. That would have set the Ticats up very deep in Argos territory. Now, the last one I want to talk about, you brought up the 3rd and 17 earlier. And this is one that live absolutely looked like a blown call. It looked like SJ Green on that 3rd and 17 play was offside. And in freeze framing it, I went back and watched it. He looks very close to being offside. It's not as bad as I thought when I saw it live. But it was close enough or bad enough that even Chris Cuthbert said, and I noticed this because when I do the intro for the show, I go and I cut out things from the highlights of the game. And I was watching the highlights to find what I needed to cut out to get the audio for it. And you hear Chris Cuthbert say, oh, he looks offside, no flag thrown. Again, it's another instance of if the guys watching the game are like, oh, that looks bad, or that looks like it should be a penalty. And they like this one to me, it was very close. When you freeze frame it down, it's like he looks like he's in the neutral zone at the snap of the ball, which I'm sure most receivers are. But on a 3rd and 17 with the game on the line, if that's called a penalty, the Argos are back in 3rd and 22. Who knows if the game is over at that point? Do they pick up a 3rd and 22? I don't know. I'm sure there were more in this game. These are the four that stood out to me, and I want to talk about them. But we have to reiterate, we're not blaming the officials. But I'm starting to getting sick, and I saw a lot of it on social media the last couple of days of people thinking that if you point out officiating mistakes, you're blaming them for the loss. And that to me is not, it's not the same. Being critical of how the officials are doing their jobs is not equal to blaming them for the loss. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And on that play, I think he looked slightly offside or really offside, depending on what angle you look at and which video you see and whatever. But to me, the offside receivers, I think receivers are offside on almost every single play in the CFL. And I think there's a little bit of leniency towards that by the referees. Like if you're a half yard or even a yard offside, they usually don't call it. And I don't have a huge problem with that, but it does kind of suck to see on 3rd and 17. And then you look at the replay and it looks like they're, you know, a yard or two offside. It does make you a little bit upset if you're a fan.
Yeah, and that's why I saved those two to last. I don't think they were as bad as the other two. The two turnover call, like the PI call and the fumble call, I think were way worse than the last two. But again, it all just kind of adds up, and a lot of things affect the outcome of the game. It's both how the team plays, how the other team plays, but also the decisions the officials make. Like it all matters, and we're going to point out mistakes that the Ticats made in this game on offense and defense. I think it's fair that we should do the same with officiating. And when there's so many, it's hard not to talk about it.
Yeah, it is very hard not to talk about it because, like, once again, it affected the game. You know, you hear people say that football games come down to two or three plays, and those two plays were huge. It didn't cost them the game. This team was up in the fourth quarter and let a lead slip away. But it certainly didn't help, and we have to talk about it.
So I've said my piece on the officials in this game. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we move on?
No, I'm sick of it. Sick of the official talk. Let's All right. Move on to defense.
Let's talk about the players. Let's talk about what the players did in this game. And we got let's start with the O, if you don't mind, because this is the last time we're going to talk about this player, unfortunately. CJ Gable was a beast in this game. There's a lot of consternation about should they take out Alex Green after he had 140 yards rushing against the BC Lions. Gable gets the start and has his best game of his professional career. 157 yards rushing on 18 carries. For those out there that do the math, that's 8.7 yards per carry. He had a long of 46 and two touchdowns. He was involved in the game all game, and he played phenomenally. It was so great to see, and it made the news that we'll get to in a little bit a little harder to swallow after you watch him have a performance like that.
Yeah, he was great. I was questioning a bit the decision to put in Gable over Green, but you slip Gable in, and he has an even better game than Green had last week. I mean, this guy still has a lot in the tank, and I think that his new team will benefit greatly from him coming over. But you have to give a lot of credit to the offensive line as well. There were some holes there, especially on that 46-yard run. That hole was huge. You could have run through it. Yes, exactly. I mean, we could have both ran through that and gained maybe half the yardage that he did, but it was a great performance by him and the offensive line. And I think once you put Green back in there, I think there's, you know, whoever's back there, I think is going to get yards, going to get production if they continue to hand the ball off like they have been the last 2 weeks.
Well, as you said, the Ticats have a run game. And that, I think, regardless of who is back there toting the rock, that's what we need to take from this. They have nearly 300 yards rushing in the last two games. And again, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but I would be hard-pressed to say that they had 300 yards rushing from their running backs the rest of the season. Like, these last 2 weeks have been phenomenal, and Gable was great, Green was great, but I think the takeaway from this is Hamilton has committed to running the football, and it's brought about good things.
Yeah, it's working. It's working phenomenally. And, you know, it just helps out Mazzoli. I mean, he did, once again, his percentage was below 60%. I thought this was maybe his best game, even though the percentages are low. He passed for 2 touchdowns, almost had 300 yards in the air, 5 rushes for 32 yards. I mean, the running game really helps out a quarterback like Jeremiah Mazzoli, who just isn't really a pocket passer, can't just sit back there and pick apart defenses on a constant basis. But if you have that running game, it really adds something to this offense.
It keeps the defense honest, and I think that's the most important thing that we're seeing with this team now with a running game, is that teams cannot just focus on attacking the quarterback. They have to respect the run game. And hopefully this continues throughout the season with Alex Green as the team's starting running back. I think it will. I think June Jones has a philosophy of running the football. And I think that's been one of the key elements and one of the good elements of the coaching change that happened earlier this season, is we're now seeing a revitalization of a running game in Hamilton. And I think that that is a major positive. Another major positive in this one, Mike, was the return of Andy Fantuz. That was the story coming into the game. Fantuz sees his first action in a little over 11 months, and he was a bit invisible in this game. He only had 3 catches for 23 yards, but it was just nice to see him back out there, no?
Yeah, and a couple of those catches were tough. Andy Fantuz-like catches for first downs. So, yes, he didn't have huge numbers, but I think that he made an impact in this game in other ways. The other receivers that really stood out were obviously Jalen Saunders and Brandon Banks. Both had 100-yard games. Banks made some really tough catches, some really impressive grabs by him. He is showing that he's a bona fide, dependable receiver. And, you know, you can't take that away from him. The choice to take him out of the return game and put him into the receiving game has paid off in huge ways.
It's made this team better. Brandon Banks is a bona fide receiver now. He has flourished in this offense since given a chance to be a full-time member of the offense. I have in big bold letters here, Brandon Banks needs to remain a Hamilton Tiger Cat. And that's not something we would have said 10 weeks ago when he was having trouble in the game and he wasn't playing on offense and he couldn't return anything. But now he is a receiver and he's a damn good one.
Yeah, and he only had 3 catches and he had 100 yards. So that's a 33.3 yard average. That's incredible. And Jalen Saunders wasn't far behind. He had a 24.2 yard average. So these guys are making catches and they're gaining huge yardage with those catches.
Well, Speedy B's touchdown on the first drive of the game, I think it was the second play, maybe third play of the game, where he takes the screen pass and then hits the afterburners, and he still has that world-class speed because he was even with the defender. And I've heard receivers in the NFL say, if I'm even, I'm leaving. And boy, was he leaving. He was in the end zone. It was awesome. They have deep threats on this team. They still don't have Terrence Tolliver, who won't be back till next year. This offense, even if Jeremiah Mazzoli is back as the quarterback next year, he's got an ability to throw the ball deep. With Banks there, with Saunders there, and Tolliver back, this offense could be pretty darn entertaining and pretty good with getting the big chunk yardage on these plays. Like you mentioned, 33 yards per catch, 24 yards per catch. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's unheard of. Those averages, just crazy. And the one thing that has always been troubling me this season, especially earlier on in the season, was the offensive line. And I can't say enough good things about this unit right now. They're just they're doing a great job.
They are. They absolutely, like this. We've said it now. What, 3 weeks running? This fivesome is the group. These are the guys that they should go with, and they're proving that they're. Tony Washington on the left side has been awesome. Matthews, even though he took a very stupid penalty that we'll get into in a second that cost this team a touchdown, he's been great, and we know what the Canadians in the middle can do. So there's no need to talk about the offensive line anymore. It's we look now at this team, and I think we said it last week, or I said it to you. I can't remember when it was, but if I'm repeating myself, I apologize. But kicking, the secondary, and the offensive line, the three major things that we were worried about coming into this season have all finally been answered. It's sad that it took 4 months to get there, but all those areas are clicking.
Yeah, this is a good team right now, and it's really too bad that they're a good team when, you know, they put themselves in such a big hole with that 0-8 start that it doesn't really matter how good they are now, because they can't win every single game down the stretch, as we saw in the last game against the Argonauts. And I just don't think they can dig themselves out of this huge hole. Because if they were this team the whole season, I guarantee you we'd be fighting for first place in the East.
Well, that's the thing. If this was the start of the season and they were 3-2, which they are in their last five games, we wouldn't be complaining about them. But they're 3-10 because of how they start. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but it doesn't matter because the season starts after Labor Day. So.
Oh, well, yeah, of course. That's what everyone says. But this proves foolish, because that's the case. The Ticats are in the playoffs and the Eskimos aren't, because the Eskimos haven't won since before Labor. But anyway, I digress. I do want to touch back on Jalen Saunders for just a second before we get into some of the offensive miscues that I think we talked about, the refing issues. We need to talk about what this offense did that cost them the game.
The shotgun at the 1 yard line. Sorry.
We'll get to it.
Okay.
Deep
okay,
breath. I just want to give Jalen Saunders some praise for rebounding from a zero catch game against BC. That was surprising when after the game you noticed he didn't have any catches. And he came back in a big way. You mentioned his yards per catch average, but he led the team with 121 yards against Toronto. He made some pretty big catches. So it was nice to see him rebound from that performance. Okay, Mike, let's get into – I know you want to rant about it. Get into it. Shotgun on the goal line. Go.
I saw – I tweeted out. Okay, I kind of jinxed him too. I tweeted out, it's okay, he's down at the one, but we'll punch it in. Don't worry. And what happens? We're at the one, and somehow we end up at the 20-yard line and kick a field goal. But this, I don't understand. The shotgun from the 1 yard line, like, please, like, that's just – can we just line up behind center and hand the ball off, or QB plop, just plop it? It didn't cost, you know, they got stopped on that play, yes. Then the penalty after that was what really cost them. But can we just not be shotgun at the 1 yard line? It's just, it really bothers me. Can we just not do this, Josh, please?
If it was up to me, we'd never do it. It would be all plops and flippy doos, Mike. All yes. Plops and flippy doos.
Yes. It's it just... I almost had a hernia there when I saw them lined up in the shotgun. When we're already at the 1 yard line, why are we snapping it to the 5 yard line? And I disagree with that call, as you can tell.
The only way you do that is if you're going to throw the football. You don't do that if you're going to run the football. Now the thing is, if Matthews doesn't take the holding penalty, we're not having this conversation because they score a touchdown. But they didn't, so we are having this conversation. But for them to go from first and goal from the one to third and goal from the 28, that's the Ticats of July, where they just they get into a position to do something and then say, you know what would be fun? Shooting ourselves in the foot. And you know what? Now that we've shot ourselves in the foot, why don't we shoot ourselves in the face too? Because they take the one penalty that bumps them back to, I believe it was the 11, and then they allow pressure, and Jeremiah Mazzoli just flings the ball out of there and gets an intentional grounding call. Like, it ended up not mattering, because whether they wouldn't have been successful in the play anyway, but it was just like, it was a calamity of errors, and you're just like, what is going on? You had it at the 1 yard line. We were 30 seconds ago, we were all cheering because we thought we had a touchdown, and now we're kicking a field goal. It was very deflating.
Yeah, I just, it's so Ticats 2017 to. Be knocking on the door at the 1 yard line and end up at the 20 yard line. It's just, I don't know what to say about it. It's just the way it is.
Okay, so let's move on to a couple other things in this game that the offense did that I think played a major role in the loss. The pass to Luke Tasker late in the fourth quarter where he is wide open and Mazzoli just overthrows him. I also think that Tasker may have flattened off the route a little too early, and if he would have kept going up the field, he would have caught it. But, man, what a missed opportunity, because that would have been a big gain, would have picked up huge yardage, would have probably put them, I believe, in scoring position, at least would have kept the clock going, could have taken some more time off. They didn't. That's a huge, huge missed opportunity looking back on it.
Yeah, I thought maybe I thought Tasker would have dove for that ball. He might not have caught it, but I would have liked to seen that effort because, you know, if he makes that catch, we know he's capable of making these outstanding highlight reel catches. So I would have liked to seen a dive on that, just so I know that he was giving the full effort. Not that I'm not saying that I'm sure that Tasker always gives full effort because he's a guy that I'm a huge fan of, and he gives it every game. But yeah, he just missed him. And that was a huge miss by them.
And last but definitely not least, this team rolled up 461 yards of offense in this game. They were running up and down the field. And then the fourth quarter comes, and then their final five drives in the fourth quarter and in overtime, they have five straight two and outs. In overtime, it was three and out. And they had 10 total yards. When you're nursing a lead late in a game, when you're trying to close it out, 5 2 and outs and 10 total yards is not going to get it done.
No, this team definitely has to learn to close a game, to finish a game out, because they had it in the palm of their hands, Josh. They had this game and they couldn't put it together, you know, put one drive together, waste some time, maybe get a field goal or something. But 5 2 and outs when you're trying to hold a lead and you're giving the ball back to a team that is pretty good, like offensively pretty good, with a dangerous running back, and we all know what Ricky Ray can do. It's not enough. They had the lead, and they should have put more points on the board to save that lead.
Yeah, we're going to look back on this one, and as my girl Katy Perry said, this is the one that got away, Mike. This is the one that got away. So that's it for the offense. Let's move on to the defense. You brought up Argo's running back. Last week when we were talking about this game, you said one of the big things was trying to stop James Wilder. And looking at the stats, he did a pretty good job stopping James Wilder, don't you think?
He did a damn good job. They obviously focused in the whole week of practice on shutting down Wilder. We shut down this guy. We're gonna make Ricky Ray pass the ball to beat us. And that's exactly what they did early on. They were just all over those run plays. He didn't get anything. You know, he only had after those two huge games previously by James Wilder, you know, 300 plus yards in two games. They held the best running back in the CFL at this moment to under 50 yards, a 3.8 yard average. So for the defense, they sure did their job at shutting down James Wilder.
And a long of 12. That's the big thing, yeah, too. Wilder was busting off big runs the past 2 weeks. His long was 12 yards. That's damn impressive.
Very impressive. And they were sending the heat on Ray, especially early on. I believe they had four sacks and a lot of pressures. They did a great job at making Ricky Ray uncomfortable, especially in the first half.
The Nikita Whitlock sack was the hardest I have ever seen a human being hit another human being in a long time. It's one of those ones where I'm in the stands biting my knuckles going, ooh, because I could feel it up in the stands. That was hellacious, and it was awesome to see.
Yeah, and I forget who it was, but it was a blindside hit that you could just see coming. You saw the blitz coming. You knew that Ray was going to get nailed, and I believe it was the fumble, actually.
Oh, DeMond Washington had that sack.
Yeah, DeMond Washington nailed him. Ray was hit really hard about four times on those sacks, and I was actually surprised that he got up after a couple of those hits, but man, they did a great job at sending the heat and just disrupting this Argonaut offense early on.
Yeah, they did a lot. Like, and this is the thing, because it's a loss, but it's not the early season Ticats losses, so we're not sitting here with nothing to talk about positively. They did a lot of good in this game. look at the numbers the receivers put up. Devere Posey had 100 yards, but a lot of that came near the end of the game. And obviously that counts, but SJ Green, 49 yards. Amani Edwards, 46 yards. Like, they didn't give up a ton. Ricky Ray had 330 yards passing, but, and again, I don't have the numbers in front of me broken down, but you got to think over 150 that came in the final quarter. So for three quarters of this game, this defense was shut down.
Yeah, and like we talked about earlier, the two and outs in the fourth quarter probably really hurt this defense because they're on the field most of the fourth quarter. So, yeah, it's a damn shame that they lost this game because they put in a hell of an effort. And I believe that they put in a hell of a game plan to shut down all the Argonauts' main weapons. You know, James Wilder, SJ Green, Amonte Edwards. They had to look at other players like Jimmy Ralph, Devere Posey to make the plays. And I believe that the Ticats, that was their plan, to shut down Green, to shut down Wilder, and they did a hell of a job.
They really did a hell of a job. Damon Washington, who everyone hadn't had a great season up to this point, remembered for spitting on, I believe it was Derek Dennis in the game against Saskatchewan a few weeks ago. He was really good in this game. Really, really good.
Yeah, he was good on he was good returning the ball too. Good defensively, and you know, he had three kickoff returns for 63 yards. So that's a pretty good game on two sides of the ball.
Yeah, this defense impressed. Larry Dean, I thought, had a hell of a game. He was basically a human cape for James Wilder. I think he had five or six of his tackles came on Wilder carries. So it's like, this is a guy who I think is underappreciated. We say it all the time. I don't think he gets enough publicity. I don't think he gets talked about.
They're starting to talk about him, though, on TSN. They're starting to talk
about
him.
Are they? Good, good. Yeah, I'm glad, because he does not get enough publicity as being one of the league's elite linebackers, I don't think. I think he gets lost. Simone Lawrence is a big personality on this team. He doesn't have, like, he's very regular looking, if you understand what I mean. Like, he does, there's nothing about him that stands out. He doesn't have a boisterous personality. He just goes out there and does his job, and he's the guy that gets lost in the shuffle. And for you to say that they're talking about him TSN more, I'm glad to hear that, because he deserves all the credit he's getting.
Yeah, he's one of the best linebackers in the league all season long, so... Yeah, he doesn't get the attention right now, but I think that they're starting to talk about him more now. I think by the end of the season and maybe into next season, he's going to be talked about quite a bit, and he'll probably be pretty high on that top 50 list.
Yeah, he'll be one of those guys that if he's not on the top 50 list, when I do my annual snubs, he'll be the guy that definitely will have been snubbed. Anything else defensively you want to touch upon?
No, I think that's about it. You know, we pretty much covered all the bases. They did a great job until, you know, what happened in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. No. Do you think that also was like we talked about the two and outs? Do you think that they were just tired? Like they didn't play a ton, but do you think they may have just gotten tired at the end there?
Yeah, it could have been. And you know, that touchdown grab by Posey was a hell of a catch. So I think they had pretty good coverage on him. He just made a play. And sometimes that happens, you know. Sometimes offensive players just make a play and there's not really much you can do about it defensively.
Special teams-wise, I don't think there's a ton to talk about on specials this week, but there is obviously the big one, that the punt return they allowed. It sucks because last week when they played Chris Rainey, they hemmed him in, and then early on in a game, and this is the thing, they were up at halftime 21-14, and they thoroughly outplayed the Argos in the first half. But a big play, but it was, I believe, the Argos' first two touchdowns came on. Oh no, I think the third touchdown came on the fumble. But the punt return, they gave up a punt return. That's a big play. It's like the Ticats were so much better than the Argos in the first half, and only had a 7-point lead. And it kind of speaks to where this team is. They are much improved from where they were at the beginning of the season, but they still have flaws. But that punt return touchdown, watching him take it to the house was a gut punch.
It was, and I think it gave them some momentum going forward, because the offense of the Argonauts wasn't really getting anything done. And then Martez Jackson has that huge return for the touchdown, and it gives the team more confidence. So yeah, that was a huge play by the Argonauts, and a huge play to let happen by the special teams unit.
All right, so to put a bow on this game, Mike, we are going to name our glorious player of the week. It is my week to do it. Larry Dean was a guy that I considered for this, but CJ Gable is no longer Hamilton Tiger Cat, and he had a monster performance, and I think to give sort of recollections of all the things that he has done for this team and for the game he had, I don't think there's anyone else I can pick for this week's Player of the Week other than CJ Gable.
Yeah, very much deserved. His best game that I've seen him play, and you know, probably since his rookie or second season in the league when he was really tearing it up for this team. He was just a man possessed running the ball, and that's what he's been like the last couple games he's been in there. So, yeah, well-deserved by CJ Gable, a really good running back that has been with us for many years, and I agree that it's kind of sad to see him go.
So that will roll us right into the Ticats news, and the first thing we're going to talk about is CJ Gable. Earlier on Monday, he was traded to the Edmonton Eskimos for two players from the Eskimos negotiation list. This one, I don't normally get attached to players anymore. I'm older. Guys come and go all the time. But this one, for some reason, Mike, this one hit me hard. I saw the news and it was just like I felt deflated. I don't know why exactly, but it just, maybe it's because he had such a great game and he's battled injuries, and there's just some guys that have played for this team over the last few years that I want to see them win here. Gable is one of those guys. Marwan Hage was one of those guys. Peter Diakowski was one of those guys. Like, you want to see those guys get their due, and you want to see them do it in a place that they've done it for a long time. This was Gable's fifth year in Hamilton, and it doesn't seem that long ago, but he's been here since Ken Austin took over in 2013. That was his rookie season. He was a East Most Outstanding Rookie. He was a CFL All-Star. Like, he has contributed to this team. He dealt with his injuries in 14 and 15, where he missed a ton of time. But, man, I just wanted to see him so badly win here. And now he's off to Edmonton, and I think I can speak for you and say I wish him the best of luck. But this one hurt when I saw it, Mike. This one really hurt.
Nah, it didn't really hurt me that much. I think that, like I said earlier, I think Gable's been great, and I think that he's been underutilized, and I think he could have, you know, put up a lot bigger numbers, done a lot of more things for this team if given the opportunity. But at this point of the game, he's a free agent next year. We have a guy in green that we've seen in only one game, but I believe that this offensive line is good enough that you could put not anyone, but you can slide Green in there. He's going to get the productivity that Gable had in this game, or maybe not to this extent. I mean, that's a lot to ask, 160 yards, but I think that you put him in and he's going to be productive. And it's a cheaper salary as well, I assume. So, yes, it kind of sucks to see him go because he's been a Ticat for 5 years and we've been big fans of his. And we wanted him to contribute more to this team, and it just didn't happen. But to see him go, meh, you know, whatever. Doesn't bother me, really.
You are a cold, cold man. No, I kid. I understand the business side of this. He's, like you said, he's going to be a free agent. He wasn't making significantly more, at least from what's reported. He was making around $90,000. Green, you got to think, is on a league minimum. So you're thinking about $35,000. At this point of the year, I don't think that's a huge, huge difference in salary. The age isn't really much of a difference, even though Green's in his first year in the CFL. He's like 6 months younger than Gable.
Right.
But like, yeah. I do understand, like, Gable's got the wear on his body, and Green doesn't. And I don't want to diminish the, like, Gable's contributions here, or the fact that it legitimately, like, took me aback when I saw the news. I do understand it, though. Like, I don't want it to be like, I don't, it's not like, oh, I can't believe the team would do this. I totally get the move. It sucks because I think Gable's one of the good guys. I know his girlfriend or fiance was on Twitter thanking the people of Hamilton for catching her in. And when you see players and their family sort of get into the community and become basically an honorary Hamiltonian, it really hurts to see those guys let go. And I hope he goes to Edmonton, and I hope he has a long career ahead of him. But being a 30-year running back, maybe doesn't have a lot of time left. But, you know, I hope he has some success elsewhere. And he's a guy that no matter where he plays, I think I'm always going to be a fan, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And he comes to the city that I reside in, so I'll be cheering him on here, and just like John Chick. So I am a little sad to see him go, but not overly. Because he's going to be a free agent and Green is signed next year, it just makes logical sense to get something. I know that it was negotiation list players, and you never know how that's going to turn out, but at least he just didn't walk, right?
Can't agree more with you there, Mike. Players come, players go. Players coming is the news now, and we're talking about Johnny Bloody Manziel once again. The news came out, what was it, 2 days after we recorded last week, I think, that the league will not register a contract for Manziel this year. But he can sign for next year if he meets certain conditions that were not and apparently will not be made public. The Ticats now have a deadline of November 40th. Yeah, because that's a date, you idiot.
It's March.
It's March 40th. November 30th to offer him a contract. I have lots of thoughts on this. I outlined some of them in an article for Three Down Nation last week. But I'd love to hear what you think, Mike.
We keep – it seems that we do the outline every week and you send me it and it's Manziel again. But we have to talk about it because it's a big story and it involves the Tiger Cats. So I am glad that they didn't bring him in this year because it's kind of a waste of a year on a contract because I'm assuming he has to sign a 2-year contract when he comes to the Ticats, if he comes to the Ticats. So I was glad that he didn't come in, 3/4 of the way through the season. He can come in next season during training camp, if he's going to be the starter, earn that job and, get a full season under his belt. He can't just be thrown into the fire and they go, okay, you're Johnny Manziel. You did this in college. Now win for us immediately. Need some time to get used to his teammates, get used to the offense, get some reps in training camp. So I'm overall happy with the decision to allow him to play, but not till next season.
So maybe I'm being cynical here, but I feel like this ruling is kind of the league trying to have it both ways. They get to look strong by not allowing Manziel, who we know has a domestic violence charge in his past, to just come in when he wants, play, sign a 2-year deal, but the first year is really only a 1-month deal. But they also get to keep their name in the news anytime Johnny Manziel is brought up. Anytime his name comes up in the American media, and we can say what we want about it, whatever, we don't care about the American media, but getting their name out there in the American media helps attract viewers, could help grow the league. They get to keep – anytime Johnny Manziel will come up, Johnny Manziel is working out. He's got this deadline to play in the CFL. It keeps them in the news, and I feel like – and again, I've said it. I could just be cynical here. I feel like that's what the league's trying to do here.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that they want publicity – Not any way they can get it, because the whole fiasco with Art Briles early on the season was not good publicity. They say any publicity is good publicity. That's not true. Where was I going with this, Josh? professional here. But yeah, I don't know what to think about it right now. He's obviously a controversial guy, and we've talked about that before. But yeah, they want to grow the game on ESPN in the States, grow it internationally. And Johnny Manziel is a huge name. Everyone knows Johnny Manziel. Everyone knows Johnny Football. Canadians know him. Americans know him because college football is huge down there. And he was one of the biggest stars, if not the biggest, in college football for a couple of years in the States. So I think if he does sign with the CFL team, with the Ticats, I think the viewership will go up hugely on ESPN. People are going to be interested, and I don't see anything wrong with that, trying to keep CFL in the name of the American media and all that stuff. So, yeah, you're being a little cynical, but you might be right as well.
It's smart business for them to do. I don't fault them at all. The one thing that does bug me about this, though, is that with this sort of half ruling with no, he can't play this year, but maybe he can play next year, it keeps the story going for the next 2 months when the league could have killed this immediately by saying yes, he can play, or no, he can't. Think about it. The trade deadline's coming up in October. You don't think Johnny Manziel's name is going to be floated out there for in the week leading up to it of could the Ticats trade his rights? This is going to be something that will come up. he will be brought up again once the Ticats season ends. The Manziel rumors could conceivably take away from some Grey Cup coverage if the Ticats aren't in the Grey Cup, and it's very likely they will not be. So you could have a situation where a couple years ago, do you remember when the whole is Chris Jones going to Saskatchewan thing took off in the days leading up to the Grey Cup, kind of took away from the Grey Cup, and then immediately afterwards he does sign in Saskatchewan. It kind of took away from the Eskimos and their victory. This could do the same thing where we're going to be taught. I guarantee you during Grey Cup week, if the Ticats are not in the game, and I don't think they will be, you're going to hear a lot of talking heads with the people at TSN at the Grey Cup saying, what's the latest on Johnny Manziel? What's the latest on Johnny Manziel? Instead of focusing on the game. And then obviously once the game itself ends, it becomes nonstop news for the next 4 days until the Ticats finally make a decision on will they sign him, will they trade him, what's going to happen. I do, in my heart of hearts, believe there is a deal done, that they either have a trade done and a contract ready to go, or they have a contract ready to go for him to play for the Ticats. I don't think this is going to take a long time, but I think it will detract over the next 2 months from the games themselves, especially the Grey Cup. I do not want to see Manziel is signed. Manziel has a contract. You know what I mean? Like, you know that that's going to happen.
Well, yeah, and you know that the annual NFL's coming to Toronto story is going to come out too. That happens pretty much every Grey Cup, but that's kind of out of left field. But I just
just wanted to get that in there, eh?
Yeah, because I think that a certain sports station likes to do that pretty much annually, and it kind of bugs me. But I think that people are going to be talking no matter what about Manziel. He, like I said, he's a huge name, and people are interested. So I hope it doesn't take away from the Grey Cup, because the Grey Cup game should get all the attention. It should be nationwide. You know, it's the one time a year where all the media pretty much focuses in on the CFL, and that's the way it should be. But you look at this team is going to look a lot different next year. Like, Caleros could be gone. Mazzoli could be gone. Manziel could be in. We know Gable's gone. You know, it's just going to be a different team next year, and I hope it's more of a, not a rebuild, but a restocking of talent. I don't want to see this team go downward and, you know, be bad for a couple of years. Obviously, I'm a fan. I want them to be good all the time, and I understand that that doesn't happen, but I'm just not ready for a rebuild right now.
No, it feels like we just got out of a rebuild. Like, yeah. I know 2009, I like to bring up 2009 a lot. That's sort of the start of this run here that Ticats have been on, of being a playoff team, of being a Grey Cup caliber team. That's sort of where it started, and that doesn't feel that long ago, but it's been almost a decade that the Ticats have been pretty much a consistent playoff team. So it sucks that it could be their turn already again to be the bottom feeders, but hopefully, like you said, this is more of a restocking than a rebuilding. I do just want one last thing about Johnny Manziel before we move on. I couldn't not bring this up. We got to take a shot at Rod Peterson here, because last Monday after we recorded, he was apparently on the radio in Saskatchewan saying, I heard today that the Ticats will be signing Johnny Manziel, and then that didn't happen. And then, something we'll get into later, the team that he purportedly covers made a big signing of their own, a former first-round pick of the Cleveland Browns, and he was nowhere on that at all. It was all about Johnny Manziel. So, Rod, maybe stay in your lane there, buddy.
Yeah, it's very, very strange. A team that he covers, a team that he is totally in love with, he doesn't know. He doesn't know that they're bringing in an ex-NFL running back who was drafted very high in the NFL draft. And it's a pretty big story, especially for, you know, a team that you cover. And I don't know who his sources are, but it seems to me that they are wrong quite a bit. So I think you should just do his radio show. You know, he's a media personality and he's a good play-by-play guy, but maybe take a step back on the breaking news and the sources.
Yeah, leave the breaking news to Justin Dunk and just stick with the writers. Another bit of Ticat news, they made some actual player moves this week outside of trading CJ Gable. They released Ricky Collins. We remember Collins was traded for back on August 18th. He was brought in along with a 7th-round pick in exchange for Mike McAdoo and a 6th-round pick. McAdoo was released by the Riders about a week later. Collins lasted about 6 or so weeks with the Ticats, never seeing game action at all. Mike, this may go down as one of the most meaningless trades in CFL history for both teams.
Yeah, I don't really... Well, they had to have liked him because they traded for him, and then I don't know why he wasn't... Was he injured, or, like, I don't know what the deal was with him, but he did not see the field, and apparently they just didn't like what they saw from him. So I was kind of excited when they brought him in because he was a name, and he showed some things in, when he was with the Rough Riders, some potential, and now he's gone. He didn't have a chance to show us anything.
No, I was actually very excited when he was signed or traded for by the Ticats, and I thought, oh, this is another guy we can see on the field. And at that time, the Ticats were winless. He was acquired on the night of the Ticats losing to the Red Blacks to go to 0-8. So it's like, okay, the Ticats are kind of out of this. Let's see some guys getting a new face in here. Maybe he can do something. And then he never saw game action, which I thought was strange. But, you know, it's kind of a numbers game, and they have two Canadians that start at receiver now with Fantuz back and Shamad Chambers, and they only have three starting Americans, and Junior Collins is a guy who has experience with this team, so he was kind of that veteran insurance. There, unfortunately, really wasn't a spot for Ricky Collins, which is a shame because I think the kid's got a lot of talent. I think he'll find a team at some point and stick because I think he's a really good football player.
Mm-hmm. And there's talk about attitude problems or anything. I haven't heard anything that he's a problem in the locker room or anything like that. So if I also think he's a talented guy, and I think he could be a starting receiver in this league on somebody's team.
I totally agree with you there. Ticats also cut Mitchell Baines. Baines played in 3 games for the Ticats this year, and he had 4 catches for 33 yards. He was one of the slew of Canadian players the team signed back when they had all those injuries. He didn't do much, like I said, 4 catches for 33 yards. But when I watched him play, I really liked watching him play. And here's something that the main reason I bring this up is that this team has a player named Giovanni Aprile. And I understand that Aprile is on the 6-game injured list and can't be released. But in 27 career games, Aprile has 3 catches for 24 yards. Just let that sink in for a second. Baines put up better numbers in 3 games than Aprile has in 4 years. Aprile didn't make his first career catch until August 12th of 2017. It took him 24 games to do what Mitchell Baines did in his 2nd game in the league. Baines, I think, has a ton of upside. And honestly, of guys that they've released, of it happens, guys come in and they get cut. I really hope this kid can find his way back to Hamilton because I don't think he's ever going to be a star, but I think he can be a really solid contributor.
Yeah, he didn't have much time. You know, he only had 4 catches for 33 yards, like you said, but he didn't do anything bad either. Like, he wasn't like, you know, I hate to pick on Mike Jones, but, you know, Mike Jones had his problems dropping the ball, fumbles, all that stuff. And when Baines got in there, you know, when he had his chances, he made those catches. He made those first downs. So it is a little bit disappointing to see him go. But once again, it's just part of the game. And it was probably a numbers game with Chambers and Fantuz and the backup Canadian receivers.
Yeah, I'm sure I might get some heat for this, but I saw a lot of Luke Tasker in Mitchell Baines. I know he's not as good a player, obviously, but there were similarities in their games. I think this kid can play in this league. I think he proved that, but you're right. Numbers game, Fantuz coming back, the addition of Chambers. I think that it was unfortunately just there wasn't a spot for him. But I hope this kid can find a way because you want to cheer for these Canadian kids. He was a guy who went undrafted, went to Saskatchewan, didn't make it there, came here, was thrust into a starting position way earlier than anyone could have expected, and he performed admirably. He didn't knock anyone's socks off, but like you said, he didn't do anything to really cost the team anything or screw anything up. So nope. I hope he gets a shot. I think he's a good kid, and I think he's got some talent that I think he can do something in this league.
Yeah, absolutely. Best of luck to him.
Last piece of Ticats news. I know we're going long here, folks, but it was a really busy week in Tiger Town. This is a rumor, and it was sometimes purported to be fact, but Matthew Schenette of TSN went on TSN 1150 and said some stuff about Zach Collaros' future in Hamilton. He said that he will go so far as to guarantee that he, meaning Zach Collaros, will not renegotiate his contract with the Ticats and will be wearing a different uniform next season. He later went on to speculate that Zach would say, "Thanks for the memories, Hamilton, but we will take our business elsewhere, and that business is likely going to be 55 kilometers to the east on the QEW. We had a listener question for this week that touched on this from Gregory. He wanted to ask us, if the Ticats make the playoffs and Mazzoli doesn't get injured, does Zach Collaros stay with Hamilton this offseason or get traded? So this is kind of bringing that up. Shinetti seems pretty sure that Zach Collaros won't be in Hamilton this year. And when I heard this, I wasn't really surprised. Mike, are you?
No, not at all. You have to be pretty sure of something to throw out a guarantee, right? So I think Shinetti maybe has been talking to Collaros, because it seemed like it was kind of a personal issue for Shinetti when I was listening to that interview. It was like he was wronged or something. But yeah, it does make sense. I mean, he's going to be paid. He's going to be the highest paid player in the league next year. He's been a backup for, you know, 4 or 5 games now. I just don't see a future where Zach Collaros is the starting quarterback for the Hamilton Tiger Cats. I think that relationship has been broken, and he will be elsewhere next year. So I'd have to agree with Shinetti here.
Yeah, like I said, I wasn't surprised with this at all. I think I'd be more surprised if Zach is back next year. And it's a damn shame. I remember when he was brought in, and my brother mentioned it to me last week when this all came out. It's like, man, it just seemed like yesterday when we were like, oh, we got Zach Collaros. Our quarterback problems are solved for the next decade. And here we are, what, 4 years later, and we're already getting ready to say our goodbyes?
Yeah, he was going to be the franchise quarterback for years and years to come. And there was no doubt in my mind that he would be all the way up till this season. It's just, it's too bad, because you know that the guy still has the talent. You know he can be an MOP-like player again, and unfortunately, it's more than likely not going to be with the Tiger Cats.
So a lot of the news came out of Tiger Town this week, but there still is some league news that we need to talk about, and we kind of touched on it when we were giving Rod the gears earlier, but it wasn't the former Cleveland Round first-round pick that most people thought would be signing this week. But the Saskatchewan Roughriders finally found a way to bring former Alabama Crimson Tide stud running back Trent Richardson to the CFL. He reportedly signed a 2-year deal and will make a prorated $67,500 this year and could end up making close to $80,000 next year if he hits all of his incentives, according to our man in the know, Mr. Justin Dunk. So if Dunk says it, I take it at face value. The Riders' run game, I think we can say after watching the last few weeks, has struggled since Cameron Marshall went down. So I think adding T. Rich could be a bit of a boon. But, of course, you know, NFL players coming up here, and he's had some success in the NFL. He had a pretty decent rookie season in Cleveland. He had 950 rushing yards and 11 touchdowns. But then the next year he was traded for a first-round pick to the Indianapolis Colts after 2 games. And then that's sort of when his career took a downturn. Never got to over 519 yards rushing in 2014 was the most he had before he was released this offseason. Then he bounced around some training camps. I think he was with Oakland in 2015 and then Baltimore last year. So what do you think of the move, Mike? We know that NFL stars come up here and fail, and we do know that Richardson has had his struggles in the NFL, but do you think he can kind of buck that trend and become a legitimate starting tailback in the Canadian Football League?
Well, I think he's a better option than Keenan LaFrance is. You know, he had one good game. He had one good game, and that's it. So I don't think he's okay. Like, there's nothing wrong with him. He's okay. But I think that Trent Richardson will be an upgrade. You never know with the NFL players coming in if they're going to underestimate the talent level in this league, which a lot of players do that have had big profiles like he has. But he was pretty blunt about it in his press conference. I think he said that this is a stopgap for him trying to get back to the NFL. So, you know, at least he's honest about it. I think he's going to be highly motivated, and I think he'll be a productive running back for the Rough Riders.
And he came in cut. This man is chiseled from granite, so you know he's in shape. But being in shape and being in playing shape are two different things. He didn't play this past week for the Riders against the Red Blacks. I don't know if he's going to play this upcoming week when the Riders head to Toronto to take on the Argonauts, but I'm excited to watch him play. I remember watching him at Alabama, and he is a good running back. I won't go so far as to say I'm a fan of Trent Richardson, but maybe I am. Maybe I'm a fan of Trent Richardson. I always like these redemption projects anyway. I want to see guys who maybe fell on hard times try to make amends and try to get their career back on track. And you know what? It's another highly talented player that is coming to the CFL. And if he comes up here and does well, good for him. If he comes up here and struggles, that's unfortunate. But guys are coming up to play in this league, and T. Rich is a pretty big name. We talk about Johnny Manziel. Trent Richardson was one of the most highly touted players coming out of college in a long time. Went third overall in the NFL draft. That's you're no slouch if you do that.
Yeah, and you know, he is I lost my train of thought. Whatever.
Oh,
boo. Oh no. Oh no, again, I'm really struggling this episode.
Okay, how about this? We'll move on and we'll say maybe in a future edition of CFL Football Frenzy, now available on the Android, Trent Richardson could be the starting tailback for the Saskatchewan Roughriders. And the reason I bring that up is because Mike has now finally had a chance to play the football game that some messaged me last week and said I was a little too rough on. But Mike, you have now had a chance on your Android device to play a little CFL Football Frenzy. I was not too kind to the game. What are your overall thoughts on it?
Listen, I think it's a fun little game. It is what it is, right? It's an app. It's not a full-on PlayStation 4, you know, simulation Madden-type game. But I played it for a little bit, and I enjoyed my time playing it. It's fun. It is fun. It's not what I want out of a CFL game necessarily, but for a startup project, it's pretty good. I haven't really nailed down the passing game. I've had a hard time completing passes, but my run game is just it's pretty impressive, I must say.
Do you know to do the waggle where you press hit the button and then you hit it again to get the speed burst off the line of scrimmage?
I haven't been able to do that.
If you time that right, then your passing game becomes almost unstoppable. That's what I noticed in playing it. It's you have to hit. So you'll see the button when you're in your pass situation. It'll be a player, and then you hit that, and then it's about when they're about to get to the line of scrimmage, you hit the snap button, and they get a speed burst, and they blow past the defensive back, and then you can hit your guy for the completion. It doesn't work all the time, but it does work most of the time, and then that'll be a way to get your passing game up to snuff. Thinking back on all the things I said, the one thing I wish that they had more than anything else is an online multiplayer. How much fun would it be for me and you to sit here after we stop talking and play a game, and I kick your ass because my passing game is no joke, and my running game stout, and my defense allows no like 1 or 2 points a game. Like I could whoop you in virtual CFL, and we'd have a good old time, right?
Yeah, I think that's online multiplayer is, you know, pretty much all there is now in video games. You know, back in the day, we'd have a couple friends over and we'd play multiplayer in the same room, but that just doesn't really happen anymore. It's all online, so I would love for that to happen. It was a good idea to do this. I had fun playing it. There's some complaints that you had that I had also, you know, the AI, you know, they're down by 7 on their last drive and they, you know, they kick a field goal on third down, even though that's not going to extend the game or win the game. You know, it's kind of disappointing in that sense, but maybe they'll have some upgrades and improve some of that stuff.
Yeah, I think all in all, I think it's something, and it can be fun. It's not complex, but it's not what we're craving. But it's a nice, and I think I said this last week, a nice little stopgap before we get that full console version of a CFL game, right?
If.
I'm going to be the optimist in this, and I'm going to say when. I'm going to say it's going to happen sooner rather than later.
Okay, I'm not sooner than later. It's not happening sooner than later. They have to put some money into this thing, and I don't think they're I don't think they're that committed to it to actually put the money forward to get this thing off the ground.
Fair enough. Okay, let's move on from video games and talk about actual games. Ticats got a game coming up this week. They got a tough two-game stretch now against Western opponents that may or may not decide their playoff fate. The first one here is this Friday in Winnipeg against the 10-3 Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Mike, for all the predictions that I made at the beginning of the season, I don't think I whiffed on one any more than I did when I whiffed on the Bombers. They are a damn good football team, and this is going to be a really tough game for the Ticats.
Very, very tough. I think that Matt Nichols has come into his own this season. I don't have any doubts about him anymore. At the start of the season, I did, but I think he's really proven himself. The whole team, you know, offense, defense is playing well. They're at the second best record in the league. I can't take the Ticats. I have to go with the Bombers in this one.
Yeah, well, we're not making picks right now, but good to know, because I'm with you though. I'm going to be taking the Bombers when we do our picks. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I just want to talk about some things on the off chance this team could pull off an upset. Look, I didn't think they would go into BC and win a couple weeks ago. So who knows? Maybe they can. Maybe the Bombers are due for a stumble. I don't see it happening, but anything's possible. Offensively, Mike, I think there's two things in this game this team could do to at least give them a chance to win this game. I think the first is run the damn ball. That used to be something that we'd say derisively, but now we're saying it like, just keep doing it because they've been rushing so much and doing it so well. I said earlier, they've had almost 300 yards rushing in the last two games. So I think if they can keep that up, I think they can stay in this game. And if they can stay in this game, anything can happen at the end of the game. But the big one to me, the big one to me though, is they can't turn the ball over. And I know that that's asking a lot when Jeremiah Mazzoli is the starting quarterback. And he's a guy that has been known to be prone to making a boneheaded decision here or there and turning the ball over. But one of the reasons I felt the Bombers would regress this year is I didn't think they'd be able to force the turnovers like they did last year. And while they aren't really at that same level as they were a year ago, they do seem to find, I don't know if you've noticed this, but I have, they get that timely turnover, that one at the right moment that flips the game. And like I said, with Jeremiah Mazzoli back there, this Bombers defense and the turnovers they can create, it really scares me. I think if the Bombers win the turnover battle, they will win this game going away. And offensively speaking, I think Hamilton has to have a damn near perfect outing to win this one. And I'm not sure if they have it in them, Mike.
Yeah, I will say that Mazzoli has been better with the interceptions in the last couple games, I believe. I know he had none last game. He had a fumble, which resulted in a turnover. But yeah, against a pretty good Toronto defense. So you never know. But yeah, that'll be a huge part of the game, the turnovers. It always is. And you just can't give this offense, who has become one of the best in the league with Andrew Harris and Adams as a receiver and Matt Nichols back there and a pretty good offensive line. You can't give them extra chances to put points on the board. So, yeah, they're going to have to clean that up. No turnovers would be nice, but, you know, they give away one. I'll be okay with that.
Yeah, this offense scares teams now, which is not something you would have said about them maybe even a year ago. I don't know if this offense was really that scary, but they scare defense now. The Ticats defense have their work cut out for them in this one.
Absolutely. With the way that Andrew Harris is playing, a guy that, if any, you know, listeners out there have known that I haven't been a huge fan of his, not because of his him personally, but I just didn't, I thought he was maybe slightly overrated, and he's proven me way, way wrong this year. He is just the way he's running the ball. Like the last game or the game before that, he had a touchdown run that he really turned on the Jets and just took off for the end zone. And that's something that I didn't really see a lot of in the past years with Andrew Harris. I think he's on a whole nother level this year.
He's on pace for 1,000. And we can talk about whether 1,000 yards is something that in an 18-game schedule is really that impressive. But that's the standard. And like you said, it's never been done before. And to be the first guy to do that, that would be mighty impressive. He has become an all-purpose weapon. He was always really a good receiver even in BC, but he's become something even more in Winnipeg. He's really, as good as Matt Nichols is, as good as Darvin Adams is, as good as that offense is as a whole, he's really the guy, I think, that really makes that thing go.
Yeah, you got to give some credit to Paul Lapolis as well. He's really took in Andrew Harris's game to another level. He's given him the opportunity to show that this guy's a pretty damn special player. Now, 1,000 yards rushing, you're right, in an 18-game season isn't really overly impressive. But if you put the 1,000 yards beside 1,000 receiving yards, now that's something that we've never seen done before. And obviously, if that happens, he's going to be the most outstanding Canadian this year.
I will go so far as say if that happens, he will be the MOP. I think he'll win both.
Okay.
I think if you do something someone's never done before,
right?
I don't know how you can take it from him.
Yeah, that's a great point. You'd have to think that he would get that award. I mean, Cornish got it a couple years ago, and I would argue that Andrew Harris is, if he gets to 1,000, that's more impressive than what Cornish did, even though he was a spectacular running back and racked up huge numbers on the ground that year. I just think that the overall player of Andrew Harris would eclipse that accomplishment.
Look at you. One week,
I know,
you're praising Jeremiah Mazzoli as a starting quarterback. The next week, you're talking about how great Andrew Harris is. This is a brand new mic.
I know. Well, you know, I am not afraid to admit when I'm wrong, and I was dead wrong about Andrew Harris.
Hey, I changed my stance on Chad Owens, so now what do I have to do? Flip my thoughts on Ricky Foley, and this is a completely different show than it was 90 episodes ago when we started? That's never going to happen, though.
Is he playing? Is he? I haven't noticed him in BC at all.
Yeah, neither have I. So, you know what? Whatever. I don't even know why I brought him up. Anyway, you ready to do some picks?
Yes, I already gave him a...
Yeah, so did I. So we'll go quickly. Hamilton at Winnipeg opens the week on Friday. We're both taking the Bombers. Winnipeg. So yeah. We'll just move on to the next game, which is Saturday as part of a doubleheader. It's the Riders at the Argos. This game looks like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Very intriguing game. Both similar records. I'm not sure what the Riders are at right now. I know the Argos are 7-7, but I know that the Riders are floating around that. Both good teams. I think this should be a good game. I'm going to go with the Argos, though, in a bit of an upset.
I'm going to take the Argos as well. They're at home. They're flying a little high off that victory against the Ticats, looking to clinch a playoff spot, which they will do if they win this game. I'm going to take the Argos in this one as well. The second half of Saturday.
And you got to think that they're going to run all over the Riders with that three-man rush with Wilder back there, but. We shall see.
We shall see indeed, and I don't think you're wrong. I think it could be a long day for Saskatchewan's defense, which has been good, but they're really good against the pass, not so great against the run. So Wilder could have a big bounce-back performance. If you're a fantasy player out there, I think I would consider picking him up. Second half of Saturday's doubleheader is actually a big game for us here in Hamilton. The Lions host the Red Blacks. If Ottawa loses this one, keeps the Ticats in that playoff hunt. So who do you got in this one, Mike?
Oh, please. I'm going to go with the Lions. I can't see, I believe, what's his face is starting for the Red Blacks again. So that's going to be a tough go. You know what I'm talking about. What's his name, Josh?
Ryan Lindley.
There you go. Yeah. I just can't see them winning with, him behind center. BC's been, on a really big slide lately. But I'm going to go with the Lions.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Lions, too. They've been in tough the last few weeks, but they're at home. They're coming off a bye. Ottawa just, for some reason, I think I saw that they have six losses and a tie in games that they led going into the fourth quarter. They just find a way to not get it done. I think BC, fresh off a bye, last time they played, they got beat by Hamilton at home. I think they're going to want to reestablish BC plays the place teams don't want to play. And they got to get some wins to get themselves back into the playoff hunt out in the West. So I think the Lions take this one. Last game of the week, Thanksgiving Monday, 2 p.m. kickoff. So we got some football Monday afternoon style, CFL style. The Edmonton Eskimos, who have lost six in a row, are at the Montreal Alouettes, who are I don't even know if there's a word in the English language that exists to describe what the Alouettes are right now. Mike, who are you taking in this one?
Not the Alouettes. They look worse than what the Ticats look like in the first half of the season, which is saying something. I mean, they just look terrible, so I can't pick them.
Yeah, I am not taking them either. I am also taking the Edmonton Eskimos. So I'm calling a bit of an audible here, Mike. We have gone almost an hour and a half, and we have three awesome in-depth questions that I think we would get into, but I think we're going to save them for next week, sir. I think we're going to put these off for a week from now because we went long on all the Ticats stuff. So you send us a question. There's three of them here that we're going to answer. We will get to them next week when hopefully there won't be as much chaos surrounding this team. And instead, we'll just we'll say goodnight. We'll end the episode here. That's the show. That's it. Subscribe to this wonderful show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or listen to it on 3downnation.com. Still feel free to send us questions coming into this week. We'll keep them handy. We'll get to them eventually. But if you want to throw us a question, you can always do so on Twitter. Mike, give them your Twitter handle, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And you can find me at joshsmith_82. Or you can post those questions in the comment section of 3downnation.com. Mike, that was episode 90 of Podski. We do this almost 100 episodes. We're 10 episodes away from 100. I can't believe we got here, but we have. Craziness.
I know. That's a lot of hours that we've talked football.
Yes, and, yes, it is.
It's been fun. It's been fun, and I look forward to episode 100.
So do I. So do I. So for Podski this week, I'm Josh Smith.
Now, Mike Graham, eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.